Welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First World Radio Network. I'm Z-Man, and thanks for tuning in, everybody. I believe the world over, more and more people are coming to the realization that the history of this planet has been influenced by celestial beings from off of the Earth. In my opinion, the one person that knows probably more about this than anyone alive today is our guest of honor and man of the hour every broadcast. It's Michael in Maui. Hey, Michael.
Hi there, Z-Man.
Hey, how's life treating you today, bro?
That's good. It's always good, even when it's get rough sometimes. You know, these challenges that happen in life are actually developmental. So all things pertaining to life end up working out as being good.
It's good to be Michael, isn't it? Well, sometimes I know all of us feel that the world's against us, everything goes wrong, and you know, sometimes it's hard to keep level-headed when it seems like the world's falling apart around you.
Well, yeah, well, that's one of the things that I've been, you know, kind of monitoring, looking into, and then receiving certain kinds of confirmation, especially when it came down to our present situation. It's global weather conditions that will continue for a while, and the after effects are going to be felt in the population in areas affected, especially in many areas around the world, in the youth, the children of the world. So some of these kids are going to, you know, grow up remembering devastation and how we overcome it. And that's one of the things that is being practiced right now at levels which have never been done before. As an example, we can look at great tsunami and earthquake in Japan, and the levels of which they have taken their recovery efforts, and the effect in lives of people, and the melding of society around. So as much as it seems bad, you know, there are effects that have helped make the world seem a little smaller to some of these people, as well as the world itself, and, you know, just lending in a hand. So these things go unpublished, really, or, you know, unnoticed, unless somebody really wants to push the effort. And generally, look at things that are dangerous, and, you know, but not necessarily the things that are being done to restore perhaps society and generally put it back together again in a way that it's better than it was before. And that's the current trend right now, and I believe that it's not only money that will be putting it together again, but the way in which people are looking at the situation and how they're actually having a chance to not only reconstruct, but do things in maybe a little bit different, especially in the case of, let's say, Fukushima's nuclear power plant has really, really brought a lot of attention and change in people's attitudes towards nuclear power, although some people, I believe China still remains very much in favor of nuclear power. However, with the increases in instability or plasticity of our globe, our crust, has shown that, you know, it's not quite the same as we thought it was, planet, because there's so many things right now around the planet that are affecting its stability in terms of what people believe should be stable in areas that never had earthquakes for so long, even historically, are now getting them. Old volcanoes are popping their tops, as well as, you know, the obvious weather conditions that are global, actually. And floods are global. Numerous hurricanes are global. Right now, they're affecting, you know, not only the United States, but Far East also. So these things are all part of a preparation for a a beginning to think we better look at other ways, another way of applying civilization, and that is actually going to be soon coming to a point where there's going to be some real challenges, as I said, that will inevitably affect the generations to come.
Well, you mentioned nuclear power problems, and did you see France had an explosion at a nuclear waste disposal facility, if I'm not mistaken? And of course, I got nothing against the French, but you know, we heard what the Japanese said. They lied out their wazoo, probably to the deaths of who knows how many people, when they said the accident wasn't as bad as it was. Then they kept backtracking and backtracking, and things kept blowing up and blowing up. And we now know they're a bunch of GD liars, and again, probably caused the deaths of many people because they wouldn't admit the level of the problem. Do you think the French learned anything from that? Are we getting the straight scoop from the French?
I really don't think so, because many times, as with the Japanese, they didn't really understand, because some of these things that happened were undetected. They didn't know. And then later found out, oops, it was worse than we thought. But one of the things that the Japanese demonstrated to the world was the power of hydrogen power. Hydrogen power, which is a byproduct of the reactive process there, can be developed and used to fuel the planet. It's just that in its demonstration of its energy, many times it's quite negative in its form. I still believe that hydrogen power in its many forms and uses will inevitably bring about a smoother operating planet using fuels that once combined, recombined, end up with basically water. Because that's one of the things that the Frondelang, of all things, which was explained as a power source and one of the byproducts, I was told by this, I guess, a caretaker operator, well, one anyway, who understood it well, said one of the byproducts of it was water. So using that as a hint, you know, it may be a part of the process that the Celestials use. So inevitably, you know, those who are in the financial stream, we'll have to eventually give way to allowing near free energy to start to make its way back into society, or make its way into society, generated from cracking basic water into, you know, its basic parts, hydrogen and oxygen, then recombining.
But what you're leaving out of the equation is the largest corporations in the world, I believe, are energy corporations. They're larger than many countries.
Yes.
In gross domestic product of many of the countries, these oil companies are bigger. They're stronger. They have more influence on our government, certainly on the United States government. They got the Republicans so far up there, you know what, that they'll do anything they tell the Republicans to do. So when new technology comes along, they don't want it to be successful. I was talking to an investment banker that just got out of the financial business. He's going into an entirely different line of work. Just yesterday, he was remarking how many wonderful technologies are coming available, but the investment bankers are a little reluctant to invest in them because they know they're going to have negative pressure. They're actually going to be, how do I describe this? You try to run your competitors out of business. Some people call that the free market system. And we know that these large, very powerful, multi-international corporations, they don't want anything to change. They want us to be stuck on oil for the rest of our lives. And so, while it may be the great technology, how do we fight these greedy, self-serving enterprises to maybe, you know, who are preventing world good for their selfish benefits.
Well, one of the things that ends up happening with these corporations who are driven by profit, not just by the product that they develop, but the product, but by the profit or the, I guess, the financial health of their corporation. I looked at a company years ago which benefited my in-laws, my family. They grew up with this wing of the ownership of a tobacco company, which ended up with, you know, buying out food companies. A tobacco company which had obviously Surgeon General statement and everything, then people stopped, you know, using it. And there was, and there still is a big decline in the use of cigarettes and tobacco. And yet this corporation turned around and moved around and still is extremely profitable and went into another basic commodity, I guess you might say, food in its various forms. And has, I believe, influenced and changed its availability throughout the world. And the United States produces so much food, you know, that it's just got to export it. Or you know, being led to try to use it for biofuels, but actually they have the capability of exporting a tremendous amount throughout the world, and will be key in doing so right now, you know, because many other areas are actually affected by these worldwide weather conditions that have caused some crop destructions as well as failures. So in any case, the example of the tobacco company turning about because they see something coming about, given enough time, they do change their face.
But isn't it so sad that all of humanity could benefit from plentiful, cheap energy, but, you know, if you take a sample of the population, how many people are in the, you know, these greedy businesses, it's a very small percentage of the overall world's population. Yet they'll do anything to maintain the status quo, and they will fight. It's kind of like pushing a rock uphill while you're pulling another one uphill behind you. You know, get out of the way. Let's take care of the world's needs, not the chairman of Exxon. He's already got 5 homes and 10 jets and 5 mistresses and 6 congressmen in his pocket. You know, when's enough enough? How about the rest of us?
Well, that's the state of, you know, the affairs of how, you know, empires are built, or, you know, whether it's a giant corporate empire or things. But that's just some things that, you know, you see the face of change because of Celestials, of course, gave me the vision that showed me exactly what was going to happen, and that they used oil as one of the breakdown areas in terms of stopping some of the turning of the present paradigm of energy and finance. And it will inevitably end up becoming a different product soon, because the combined forces of finance. One of the things I was surprised about is that a lot of the oil that we use comes from the Arabian area. And what was interesting was that I found out that years ago, and it's maybe a few years back, I'm not sure exactly the date, I forgot it, but their average income was something in the neighborhood of about 20,000. Today, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 6,000. Now, they're pumping a lot of oil, but something is happening to their economies. And it's all driven not only by the product that they're having to sell, but the way in which they're being financed and refinanced, because they have acquired a lot of involvement into the system of finance and banking. and are now being, you know, they can be squeezed under the control of not just the petroleum guys, but the banking industry itself, which is also powerfully intertwined, as you said. So I'm watching this very carefully because of the state of, you know, the European problems right now, because you know, apparently, you know, they want to be bailed out in Europe, which will just basically keep the old paradigm working, but that's not the way it will end up. I do believe that the United States is positioned right now in a similar, you know, tipping point. Won't be nearly as bad as Europe. Europe will look like have a very difficult time.
Well, of course, you're talking about the fact that Greece may default. That might, and then we might have Ireland default, and I don't know who else is there. Is it Portugal or who knows? There's so many of these countries.
You name them, they're all, you know, a little bit too big to just walk away from their debt and just, you know, refinance. Well, ultimately, they will have to do something. They will be putting on a whole new face on the way they operate there. And it was pretty much, even many, I was talking to some people well acquainted with the euro, and they're not being involved in the euro. Some astute individuals, when I visit Turkey, said why they didn't get involved with the euro. And they named all these things, and they said, we're just waiting for it to fail, because they don't believe it could come together, because he said, how can people, it's hard enough, we have a nation that all is one people, basically speaking one language. They have, in Turkey, it's basically one religion. They got rid of the Christians there years and years ago, shipping them off to Greece and stuff, and they became Islamic completely. And yet they said it's so hard to orchestrate a unity in the financial system and the way, you know, economy works, even with all of those nearly perfect social as well as economic situations, and within itself. And they looked at it and said, those guys never get along. So how are they going to end up, you know, helping each other out? They just won't do it. So, and we'll see as these things happen. Right now, I believe they're kind of happy that they didn't join Euro nations.
I know the Germans aren't real happy about it, because they're the only solvent ones over there. They actually take care of their finances, and in fact, they actually have a elite class in Germany that cares enough about the country. They even got together and said, "What can we, as rich people, do to help our country?" Can you imagine that happening in the United States? Rich people saying, "Hey, man, we took a whole bunch of money from this country. Let's give some back." Oh, please. Oh, please. Oh, okay, Warren Buffett said something, but you guys know the vast majority of CEOs and mega wealthy people in this country couldn't care less about the rest of us. It sucks to be us, in their opinion. Yet Germany, the folks over there doing the right thing, this whole Greek thing is going to fall on their shoulders, and they're going to have to spend their hard-earned, well-managed money to take care of another enormously corrupt, by the way, corrupt country of Greece. That is, again, it seems like, you know, we're not just talking about a city. We're talking about a whole nation of corrupt bureaucrats that have bled the system dry. And how did we get here, Michael? I mean, Bush takes office, gives away almost $2 trillion in tax breaks to people who are already billionaires, which everybody says, oh, well, that's going to create jobs. During the 8 years of the Bush administration, we didn't create any jobs. You know, this idea that, well, the rich people aren't rich enough, let's give them more money, then things will happen. Well, nothing happened except the entire collapse of the world economic system. And here we sit several years later just trying to figure out how to keep our bridges passable, how to keep our schools open, how many firemen can be the minimum number to come save your house when your kid's on fire. I mean, how did we get here, Michael?
Well, it started by, you know, untying the hands of the bankers, basically, in the United States. You know, the Glass-Steagall Act was under the previous administration to Bush, Clinton, he really didn't understand the consequences. When on his way, in retrospect, he looks back and, oh boy, you know, let the cat out of the bag, and there was a whole lot of things that, you know, he didn't realize the power. One of the tremendous changes that thing opened up was the way in which, unbelievable ways in which geniuses, financial geniuses or mathematical geniuses, dreamed up different ways in which instead of make money out of thin air, it was to make money out of basically the vacuum or basically the electrons that flow within the computing system and in the flow of money and how, you know, not even the paper it's rented on, the paper is torn up into shreds and different ways are derived to create money, and these things are all let loose, and they're still in play because it's so intertwined into the financial system that basic financial instruments seem almost too simple. You know, people run back to gold, but once they have the gold, they still got to reconvert if you need it. So they're just storing wealth in piece of metal, but not really realizing where the real wealth is, which is in the living and alive society that is, you know, healthy and moving on. It's not the case right now. People can run away with all the gold they want, but if society fails, it'll be no good for them anyway. And that's the state that was let loose. And I believe, you know, when it comes down to the celestial inner, looking down, you know, the Most Highs are looking down. They're not looking down at something that did not happen before and other areas within, you know, the system of planets that have fallen, because they all use, many of them use the very same financial systems of ideas of money and finance, and ended up with all the same results. So it comes down to really having I was pointing out earlier that our consciousness needs to be brought to a point where we are ready to learn, because today we received a little bit of a insight in terms of the next level of the move the Celestials will be working toward, and that one is directly to bring a higher level of learning, but only once all of the consciousness of the planet is ready to learn will they begin this great sweeping change. The process will take a long time because of the traditions that are intertwined in society and the traditions in which different countries as well as clans within those countries hold to, and eventually they'll become nothing more than a type of celebration versus real hindrances to the listening of or the learning experience that the Celestials are going to be bringing. This teaching mission that will be coming about and is already in operation in individuals such as myself who have been enlightened in some different areas will actually become heightened, and the awareness and the readiness to hear this is already being made, because I hear many of the youth in the world listening to that same voice in which I am right now essentially chanting. I'm basically saying almost the same thing over and over again in terms of being ready for the celestial involvement, as we want to be ready for a new paradigm away from crazy bankers and greedy banksters, I guess, you know, and insane corporate royalty, you know. So things change, and they always change, and that's one of the constants that that we have to deal with in our lives personally is that constant where we have change all the time. But right now, I can see quickly our society becoming, especially the young society, the intelligent society, the ones that are around the world with brought awareness, you know, people who had, like I say, in the Middle East, average incomes of $20,000 is now down to $6,000 or $5,000. They're intelligent enough to know that something is wrong. And they're going to look back. It's one of the things that they will do. And like you say, in the beginning of the show, you realize, and there's more and more people that realize that the celestial involvement in society was ancient to help draw it forward, but it ended up being somewhat diffused through society and not so pervasive in its exact teaching and correct teaching as being a universe citizen and essentially operating as a giant family. But it didn't end up that way. People, of course, ended up, you know, looking at the factors that befell so many of the other more rapidly advancing planets that were in the system that failed. And we are going through the process, but not as terrible as some of the other ones had. You know, there were non-existent planets in when they actually... non-existent planets like Tandinella, their home planet is not there anymore. So we are not going to end up that way, but we are to learn the lesson of why we should change our ways. And it's not essentially evil, it's essentially only evil when applied with evil. They can always be readjusted.
Well, the example you use of the income depletion,
yes,
the income reduction of an average person in over there from 20,000 to 6,000. How is that any different than a guy that used to work at a Detroit car factory or a guy that used to work at, you know, any one of the other of 60,000 companies that left the United States to make more money overseas and lay off their workers? You got guys, hey, with overtime, I was making $85,000. Now I greet people at Walmart, and I make $14,000 and no benefits. I mean, it's the same story. And again, but the people at the top, the royal family in Saudi Arabia, they're making more money than God.
Exactly.
And the people at the top echelons of our country, they are raking it in on a scale that's nearly unimaginable and is, in my opinion, totally undefendable. Yet, so is this a natural, as you alluded to before, as the Celestials looked at other planets, is this a natural occurrence of a civilization that has free will? When so much of the concentration of wealth and power gets into so few hands, once it reaches that tipping point, is that something that is, you know, with all the different civilizations the Celestials have witnessed, is that a completely natural occurrence that, oh, they're about to screw it up?
Well, that's what the Most High observers, the Verandadec observers, are all about. They're watching. That's why they call them observers. And actually, at the controls that allow certain pressures to be relieved. In fact, you know, some of it, which can be, that are not necessarily from ourselves or our economic system, like, say, the sun, has been shown to have a celestial intervention. But when it comes down to our own hands, they have very predictable formats which they can see, and they know that we need to go through sometimes. You know, it's like certain types of failures which were prevented were simply some things that should happen in a system. Yet, I take a hint from their way in which they brought to the concepts of finance in Judaism, which was a jubilee. Every 50 years, all debts were canceled. And I saw, participated in the canceller of debts. So, you know, on the there are two sides to that debt being canceled. There's the ones who have their debts canceled, and the one who cancels the debt. And it takes being on the side of the jubilee, which was passed about the year 2000, a little bit before that. there are people that owed me, you know, six figures, and I canceled their debt. And this is something that there's no sense in dragging it on; just let it go. And this kind of attitude really takes a different kind of perspective, one in which is not locked into 3-month quarterly reviews, but something much longer. And that is what gift I had in order to do that kind of forgiveness required a perspective much longer than even an annual review of finance. It had to take perspective much longer. As a result, the involvement that I would have had and the concentration I would have had in collecting nearly uncollectible debt would be something that would have detracted from my even being able to produce this show. And as far as I, not produce this show, you were the producers, but to talk on this show. And this is something that is really a demonstration. But will the world listen? Will these people with these kinds of functions able to listen? No, not as long as they have this type of short-term thinking.
If you guys want to send a question or comment in, we'll read some emails here in just a second. Hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. For those of you just tuning in, we get new listeners every week. This is Project Urantia. I'm Z-Man, and that is Michael in Maui. And he'll be taking your questions in about 15 seconds. And Michael, this is I look forward to this hour every week. This is my favorite show on the station. Just don't tell anybody because we got 30 other shows and they'll be mad at me. Our first email comes from Paul Rozick. Hey, Paul, this is cool. Paul sent us an email and it reads, Michael, what is the real spiritual power of the Maui Kava Kava plant? Am I saying that correctly?
The Kava plant?
What is the real spiritual power of the Maui Kava plant? Send some to Alliance. And that's from Paul Rozick. Hey, Paul.
Well, you just probably heard of the Kava plant, which is, it had some properties which are used for, it's properties which were analgesic somewhat, and also had properties that, depends how you got the essence out of the kava. You could actually, you know, chew on it, or you can go through fundamentally just juicing it and using it that way. And it, depending upon the quantity, would give the individual different results, because it had a way of affecting, it has a way of affecting the nervous system, some of the, there's some mind-altering abilities, and there's mind-altering abilities in, you know, just caffeine, you know. But it also had those properties, but it was a kind of way of taking the pain out of things, even life itself, but not so much so that it would disrupt as like the present levels of drugs today, you know, with the illicit drug program. Kava, in a sense, is much less mind-altering or consciousness-altering drug. It was more, you know, kind of a pain relief, I believe. I personally don't, you know, there are kava bars here because it's just something like that, but that's not necessarily a big deal.
Dear Project Urantia, Michael, do you think your both law enforcement background formed your views of humanity being bad, i.e. everyone is bad, police dispatcher lifestyle? Now, wait a minute. I was a police dispatcher. Were you a police dispatcher?
No.
Maybe that email's meant for me.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I think if you put three children in a circle and put down three cupcakes, one of those kids is going to want all three cupcakes. Maybe that's the law of nature. The strong survive. That person's genes get passed along. I think forgive me, audience, if I come across is that everybody's bad. If that's what I've sounded like, I apologize. I think there's a whole bunch of very, very bad, greedy people in this world. And there doesn't seem to be enough of kind, gentle, loving people in the world. And it only takes a handful of crazy, bad people to screw everything up for the rest of us. So, Michael, you've been doing lots of shows with me. Do I sound that pessimistic?
You keep coming up with that. As a matter of fact, I asked someone who teaches professionally little kids, and you know they have to have all kinds of degrees and certifications and master's degrees at least at levels, and just asked them, you know, when it comes down to this preschool, you put them in the room and you put down one cupcake. I gave that example. What happens? It's amazing. This is the kids get together, and some of them want it, some of them don't. Nobody seems to, you know, jump at it and just run in a corner and hide and, you know, gobble it down. There is a type of interaction that happens with little kids that is amazing, and they actually come to a point where maybe they don't share it quite evenly. But since it's not owned by anybody, they have a certain discipline about them. So this is not such a madhouse with little kids, because they kind of form their own ways of interacting, and they see that, and it's not so pervasive, and every kid's the same way as being the one that wants, and they end up being fights. There are fights, but they're not necessarily brought about because of one cupcake in the room concept, you know, thing. And they end up sharing. It's an amazing thing. As it is fairly consistent in this behavior, class, so, you know, changing with different kids or different groups. And this is, it's pretty much the same. You don't have that kind of terrible behavior that you can imagine happening in terms of that. So with that, I got a little bit, you know, happier, because it was observed by professionals that, you know, really don't look at the kids that way. Although there are some kids that you know, a little bit more aggressive than others, and some a lot shyer, but they end up sharing a lot.
All right. So then, what happens if children? Let's go from that premise for this discussion. That let's say that kids start out basically good. What the hell happens to them then? And I'm not painting everyone with the broad brush. Of course there's great kids out there. Of course there's great people out there. But look at the world today, folks. If the world was being run by great people, we wouldn't have all this mess that we have. And there's no real end in sight, is there, folks? How's your life going? How's it going over the past generations? Does it seem like things are getting better or worse? And that's a personal choice, but so what happens to those good souls? How do they become so corrupt? Whatever percentage you would care to say is the bad apples in our population.
Well, what tends to be one of the corrupting factors in my travels around the world, looking at the corruption that in society, let's say one of the best ones that I have as an example of just down right on the ground scene corruption was in Cambodia. And of course, we know that Pol Pot's genocide that happened there, and removing of the intellectuals, the educated, the doctors, the teachers, anybody who could basically have an opinion, or kind of eliminated. And those that were in power were many of these soldiers, even children, were basically not educated. They went back and they when it was destroyed, they ended up back in society in different levels and probably in government. And you see their attitudes and how they are basically capturing a lot of the finance or the money that comes into Cambodia and not allowing it to filter down to the ground, actually, to the people. They intercepted it. So many other areas ahead of the people down on the ground, you know, the everyday person. And that's kind of corruption that I do see. And as they get more and more official power, and you know, it becomes an even scarier thing, because now they can abuse it and throw people who are essentially innocent into jail. So these kinds of things happen, and it's sometimes looked upon by them as, you know, it's their role in society to make sure that, you know, these other people really don't know how to use the money correctly. You know, they gotta come through us because we know how to do it right. You know, and, well, that's government for you.
They make money the old-fashioned way. They steal it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have an email from Campy who wants to ask a question about the Book of Aquarius. And he writes, Dear Michael, please talk about humanity's past, quote, golden age, and the Philosopher's Stone being given to all of humanity in December 2012. And then he has the title, The Book of Aquarius.
Oh, well, I haven't, and I don't know about the Book of Aquarius. But of course, that's the age in which we are turned into right now, which is the age of change and enlightenment. And it has been a generation of great change. But looking at societies, or the Aquarian age, as one in which, or not the Aquarian age, but the one that you're talking about was really a look into. You might say the Garden of Eden. Now, the Garden of Eden, in its highest level, it was absolutely real. And it was filled with celestial intervention. They were there. They were functioning. And they had bodies, physical bodies. Others. And they were well able to interact, as much as I interacted with transdimensional, higher, non-physical or semi-physical angelic beings, because that is the level in which they were operating. So you had, within that Garden of Eden, individuals who had capability as immortal, you know, able to, do everything as what we do, as the basis of their enlightenment and education and development. And then you had higher individuals, such as the concept of Adam and Eve, the Adam and the Eve, who were educated and of celestial origin. They weren't born of the planet. They came over to enlighten the planet. So they were part of the process. So this is one of the oldest remembered concept, but there is even older parts of its involvement that had other celestial beings in there that had the ability to, that sex ability. They wanted to mingle their genetics with the rest of humanity, the base man, so the human. And out of that, and out of the women that came in from various tribes around the world, who were selected because of, I guess, their what would be considered their beauty or their favor, would come back impregnated with a royal line. So this concept of royalty came because many of these had been supposedly uplifted genetically by not the Adam and Eve, but by a group of individuals that were not supposed to involve themselves in the genetic uplift of society, but only in the teaching level. Now, that teaching level failed because of all of this, and it was encountered during the rebellion years of Lucifer. So it ended up failing eventually, and because of the cutoff, and the genetics became a mixed in society, this royal line, and became blended throughout the world, because it was essentially seeded throughout the world, and as a result, all the races tend to have some of that intervention, and it's something that our planet now lives with, and it is one of the characteristics that's kind of unique to our planet, with having the developed races of the world. Some of the ones that were, I guess, failed and no longer around are the people that, let's say, the Aboriginal people of Tasmania, were literally made extinct recently, in terms of historic times, but most of the other areas of the world have there were literal transport available during that time that was made by gigantic birds, and these birds are now, I guess, in Indonesia, I think, and areas like that, Southeast Asia. They're ancient. They're actually logos, and in Bali, there's the transport bird is legendary over there. And it was one of the ways in which, from Eden, not only young girls who virgins who actually received genetic impregnation by these celestials, they were other guys, men too, who were also taken, because there was education going on, so they learn different ways in which to operate and to use metal and agriculture and even finance. That's where finance had its earliest start too. So this really goes back to the idea. As simplistic as it may seem in the Bible, as Eden, but it was heavily involved with celestial work. That celestial work was crippled because a lot of the energies that were allowed for them, from the leg, which I described before, were removed, and the communication areas were removed. They didn't have that, so they were operating independently. And some of it was in kept in that terms of trying to fulfill this great new planet that was going to have this genetic implantation from so many different celestial beings. So we are actually mixed with different genetic beings. That's why when we look at our genetic makeup, it's so different from, let's say, the chimpanzees, much newer, and there's even splices in our genetic count, 46 versus 48 chromosomes, things like that. So there was also Eve's genetic expertise, which her ability was quite high in terms of understanding genetics. So that's probably one of the best ways to look at it, because it's not an illusion in terms of our historic understanding. It was really there and really operating and has gone away. But and also centered around the Middle East area, which is now shown to have. It was also below the present sea level, much farther below the present sea level, because they're operating during the ice ages.
Yes, and we are continue to find many of these civilizations' ruins at the bottom of the ocean in certain places. It's how'd they get there? Well, of course, the water wasn't there when they built them. Well, Michael, we've come to the end of the hour, and I want to make sure on every broadcast that I say, Michael does this program for no pay. We don't pay him. We have no advertisers on this program, and Michael has nothing to sell. This program costs our station tens of thousands of dollars a year. We lose doing this broadcast because we think it's that important that we put it out there and let you guys make up your own minds. We're not pushing on anybody. We're not trying to change your religion. We're just trying to get you some honest information for you to make up your mind. And, Michael, it's because you told your celestial friends that you would do this, and you are fulfilling your word to them, which also speaks volumes about you as a person and your character. And this hasn't been easy on you. You take time off work, and having this knowledge has been a bit of a burden on your life, I would imagine. And once again, on behalf of all of our listeners and the staff at Artists First, we sincerely thank you for your time.
Certainly welcome. And the Celestials also thank you for listening, because they are, during my talks, quite active in many times propagating my thoughts or propagating their thoughts into mine and mind sharing. So some of that stuff comes straight from them. You can probably tell by the way it says. So aloha. And Best to all.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. The Artie Kornfell Show follows the CBS News. Following that, it's Comedy After Dark. That's a great show if you guys can stay up for it. If not, just download the archive. Some of America's greatest and most talented comics on Comedy After Dark at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Until then, and until next week, thank you, everybody. This is Z-Man signing off. Michael, stay safe. See you next week.
Okay.
It's 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time and time for CBS News.